known sheep that could outwit you. I've worn dresses with higher IQs, but you think you're an intellectual, don't you, ape?
Apes don't read philosophy.
Yes, they do, Otto. They just don't understand it.
Hello and welcome to The Anglophiles, a podcast where two Americans talk about all the British TV and films they have time to watch. I'm Danny.
I'm Sheldon.
And we are The Anglophiles.
And I've got a brand new tea with me today.
Tell me about that tea.
Yeah, it's a tea my friend brought back from Sri Lanka. It's a nice little black tea. It's very good.
Is it strong?
It is. What are you sipping on?
This is a nice Darjeeling.
Fancy.
I haven't had it in a long time. I used to drink it almost weekly, and then I kept buying green tea and oolong tea, so I haven't had a Darjeeling in a while, but it tastes really good. This has been a good week. We've been getting more views. We've been getting more listens.
We've been getting more ear views. People have been plugging in their ears and viewing it up.
We've been getting more listens on our podcast, which is really exciting. It's nice to know that we have people coming back every week, or every other week, depending on when we post.
And not just that, it seems like people are telling their friends, which is exactly what we want, you know? Like, everyone knows one or two or three people that are into British TV like they are, and it's exciting.
I do find it really interesting that each episode of our podcast has a very different amount of views.
Yeah.
Some of them have gotten quite high, and some of them have gotten fewer listens. So it's really interesting to see, like, what people really want to listen. Are You Being Served had a surprising amount of listens to it. I guess not, because that's it's a classic, and a lot of people really like it, and it's also one of those that is just really fun to talk about.
It's true.
But also A Bit of Fry and Laurie is also really high in views, and that blew me away, because that's one of my favorite British shows, and I wasn't expecting that many other people to be into A Bit of Fry and Laurie.
Well, our audience has great taste.
They do.
And I think our audience is gonna love what we're talking about here today.
What are we talking about?
One of the funniest movies of all time, A Fish Called Wanda.
Mm-hmm. A Fish Called Wanda came out in 1988. It is a British-American heist comedy film starring John Cleese, Jamie Lee Curtis, Kevin Klein, and Michael Palin. Or Palin. I think it's Palin.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I never can remember his name.
I bet if we watched more Monty Python and we watched more, like, Monty Python documentaries, we'd probably know.
Yeah.
But
and it's directed by Charles Crichton, which is interesting because he's, like, an old-school British TV director.
Oh.
He directed things in, like, the 40s and 50s and 60s.
Hmm.
And John Cleese and him were apparently good friends, and he asked him, like, apparently earlier in the 80s, they talked about wanting to do a movie like this, didn't have an idea ready.
Yeah.
And so when John finished writing it, he brought it back to him and was like, hey, I only want you to direct it.
John Cleese wrote this movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so he wanted this guy to direct it, and apparently the studio was a little worried, where they're like, he's a very old man. And this ended up being the last film he ever directed.
Oh.
So it was kind of like his last hurrah. And so that's why you see John Cleese is credited as a co-director. He only did that so the studio would greenlight it.
Gotcha.
But apparently he only directed like one or two scenes.
Wow.
He really wanted Charles to direct the whole thing. And
if I had to guess any scenes that he directed, I'm going to say maybe the one where it's John Cleese and Michael Palin, and he's trying to get Michael Palin to say the name of the hotel, but he can't because he has a stutter.
Yeah, it's a lot of fast comedy, and I don't know for sure if he directed that, but I do know he directed a lot of scenes at the end, or a couple scenes at the end, and that one is very far at the end, because apparently he wanted Charles to have time to start getting in on the editing process. So I know he did the stuff at the airport. But yeah, I think it's an incredible cast. Like you mentioned, John Cleese, Kevin Klein, like Jamie Lee Curtis. It's an all-star cast who you wouldn't really expect together.
Yeah.
But they work so well as an ensemble.
It's such an interesting premise that it's like the heist happens really early on in the film.
Yeah,
I feel like
a
lot of heist movies, like, it kind of takes place throughout the film. And then there's the end, and then there's usually a twist. But, like, this is kind of, like, the heist happens early on, And Kevin Kline and Michael Palin and Jamie Lee Curtis are all kind of like, it's after the heist has taken place. Now they're trying to kind of like outwit each other and see who can like get the diamonds, who can take the diamonds, who's going to steal them, even though they're all supposed to like share them and fly and away together.
It's probably the aftermath of most heist movies that like we don't see, like whenever the credits roll. Years later, all these people were just, like, backstabbing each other to steal all the money. But this movie focuses on that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fascinating because, of course, people who are greedy enough to steal money from, like, a locked place...
from a bank.
...are going to be greedy enough to steal money from each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, especially when they're all lying to each other about who they are and how they know each other.
So, who do you think are some of the best characters in the movie?
I mean... it would be criminal not to say Kevin Kline gives the best performance because he got nominated for and won an Oscar for this role.
That's amazing.
Which is insane for a comedy.
Right? For a comedy, like, that doesn't happen usually, right?
No.
For like,
it's very rare, especially
best
nowadays.
Best actor?
Best supporting.
Yeah. Still, though.
Still very great.
Not usually a comedy. And this is one of those movies that it's not like a drama / comedy. It is a full-on comedy.
It's a full-on comedy. And I think a lot of modern writers could learn a lot from this movie, like, in regards to timing and pulling together a good, like, 1-2-3, like, rule of three joke where anytime he's in a car, he yells asshole at somebody. And it's one of those, in a lot of other movies, they could make that, they could really punch it in your face and let you know, like, hey, this is about to happen. He's going to say the line.
Yeah.
And this, the third time he says it is off screen.
Yeah. And you just hear it in the background.
And you know what happened.
Yeah.
Immediately you're like, yep, he ran into a car.
The first few times you see him hitting another car or driving, almost hitting another car, because he's the American trying to drive in England, so he's obviously the asshole.
Yeah, he's driving wrong and not knowing what to do.
Oh, that's what's great about his character, and I would agree with you, I think... this movie has great characters, but I think Kevin Kline's character and performance in this are just astounding. But that's one of the greatest things about him is that he gets mad. Like, his temper just, it just goes when someone calls him stupid.
Oh.
And it just, it's so ironic because his character is kind of stupid.
Yeah.
Like, he reads philosophy and he seems well-traveled, but he really is an idiot. And he has no control, like, no self-control. So it's really, really interesting.
Well, I think that's why it's like, it very much shows you the difference between book smarts and street smarts.
Mm.
Like, he's reading Nietzsche, but he's an idiot. Like, and he understands the concept of the Übermensch, and he's read all of his books and tries to, like, lord over people. He speaks Italian. Like, there's a bunch of stuff that he tries to do to seem smart.
That's,
but he's not.
That's one of my favorite lines in the movie is when... Jamie Lee Curtis's character, Wanda. Wanda calls him stupid, and he's like, don't call me stupid. And she's like, well, what are you? And then he was like, apes. She calls him an ape, and he's like, apes don't read philosophy. And she says, yes, they do, Otto. They just don't understand it.
it's a good line.
It's such a funny line, but it also kind of illustrates his relationship to philosophy. He reads it.
He doesn't understand it,
but he thinks he's smart.
And you mentioned her name is Wanda, and I think we'd be remiss to not point out, like, why this movie's called A Fish Called Wanda. Obviously, like, her name is Wanda, but the movie, like, it focuses on this fish tank with a little fish in it named Wanda, and it's a beautiful little angel fish.
Do you think that, Michael Palin's character, Ken, he clearly really likes Wanda. He's, like, kind of, like, in love with her.
I think everyone
is. Do you think he named his fish after her?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it makes me wonder, like, how long have they been working together as kind of a criminal...
Well, it said whenever she goes to court, she says that she's been in a relationship with...
George.
For, like, 2 years.
Okay, so she's been in England for at least 2 years.
At least 2 years.
Okay.
And so I think she's been there for a while scouting things, so I think it's very likely that he could have named that fish a year ago Wanda.
Interesting.
Or maybe, like, she gave it to him as a present, and he named it after her as, like, a namesake.
I do think, this movie is so funny, and it's great, and most of it really holds up, I think, by today's social standards. But one of the saddest things to me in this movie is the amount of animals that die. And, but here's my thing. So, the dogs, you normally in real life, if I were to see like, oh, somebody's fish died, I'm not going to be that sad versus yeah. if somebody's dog died, that's serious and that's yeah. devastating. However, in this movie, for some reason, all the dogs that die, it is really funny. And it's the fish that make me sad.
I've got a bunch of interesting facts about this movie, but I have a couple about both of those animal things.
Okay.
Because originally, whenever they first shot it, the dog deaths were a lot more graphic. That they used meat from butcher shops.
Ooh.
And the first test audience they showed it to did not respond well. They thought it was awful. And so yeah. they reshot all of those dog deaths because they were all terrible.
I was gonna say, some of them they show the dog like squashed or run over or whatever yeah. happens to it, but it does look very fake.
Yeah, so they went out of their way to make it fake in the other direction.
You see this like flat little, it looks like a puppet, like a dog puppet flattened yeah. on the road. So I guess maybe that's why the dog deaths are funny, is because they don't, they're so over the top.
It's
the
cartoonish.
Way that the way that the, yeah, it is.
Like,
it is cartoonish.
The dog that got run over, it looks like a Looney Tune. Like, you can almost see the tread marks on its back.
Yuck. Okay, I guess that's why it's funny, because you know, like, you know, at no point do you think, oh, this really happened.
And then with the fish,
it's Kevin Kline's character is eating them.
And those are not real fish. They're all Jell-O.
I did not for one second think that Kevin Kline was actually eating real fish.
However, Kevin Kline wanted to eat real fish. He told them, I'm willing to do it. I'll eat real fish. And
no.
everyone on set's like, no, don't.
First of all,
you don't have to do that, Kevin.
I'm pretty sure PETA would not have allowed that at the time.
PETA tends to not give a shit about fish. Most
really?
People, it's weird. Most people don't lump fish in with animal cruelty. Like, fish and insects people don't care about. If you're a mammal or a reptile, people get sad if something happens to them. But usually people don't care about
well,
fish.
Well, but sometimes insects. Because I'm pretty sure that during Poltergeist, there's that scene with the, like, meat with the maggots all over it. Mm. And I had read, I mean, it's the internet, so who knows if it's true. But I'm pretty sure I read that they had, like, an animal handler there to make sure none of the maggots got squished.
Wow.
In the scene. So,
weird.
I don't know. I think it's just, yeah, one of those things where, like, nobody wants to see real animals harmed
yeah.
on
And
on
PETA's
film.
Weird, too. PETA's not great. Let's not get it too deep into
okay.
that hole.
But I do love, like, I do feel uncomfortable when I'm watching the scene of him eating all the fish. Mainly because it's sad to see fish just die that way. But it's also, like, you're having to watch Michael Palin's character, his pet fish are being, like, murdered in front
yeah.
of him. So that's really
but
sad.
He could have stopped it at any point.
It's true. It's just
one of those
just,
weird, awful things where you're like,
horrifying to see someone's
what
pet
lengths
eat.
Are you willing to go to for the
money?
To
keep a
to
secret.
All the well, it's not just a secret. It's for all the money in the world,
it's
like
true.
To them. Would you
I
be
do.
Willing to watch all of your pets get eaten in front of you so that an asshole doesn't get your money?
Maybe.
I wouldn't.
I wouldn't.
I would tell people, like, if somebody was going to eat one of our cats, I would tell them where all of my money is.
Yeah, same.
I shouldn't tell the podcast audience that. They're going to come over and try to eat our cats.
Oh, they're going
to
take all of our money that we don't have.
Yeah, we do a podcast. I think they know we don't have all the money.
But I do think the one funny thing in the scene with him eating the fish is when he eats the little green one, and then he goes, avoid the green ones.
They're not ripe yet.
It's so good. Like, the scene is horrifying, but Kevin Kline, he's just so funny.
Yeah.
I think
the funniest thing in the scene to me is whenever he's shoved the chips up his nose and he puts the pear in and Michael Palin starts, like,
oh, he can't breathe.
It's the funniest physical comedy of somebody, like, that can't breathe, asphyxiating. Like, that is not a funny thing.
He's got french fries up his nose and a pear in his mouth.
A little bit of, like, ketchup.
I do like when he takes the pear out and then he goes... it's really funny. Speaking of physical comedy, Kevin Kline's physicality in this movie, I mean, he doesn't bring it to every role because it's not necessary for every role, but there's a couple of roles, like the Pirates of Penzance movie that he's in, where
yes.
it's just, he does so much extra physical work with his legs.
And he's somebody that I love from a lot of his live-action roles, but I don't watch as much
what
of them
live
recently.
What are live-action roles?
Like, roles where you're actually there.
Not animation?
Not animation,
okay.
Where I, like, one of my all-time favorite movies is The Road to El Dorado.
Mm.
Elton John does the music, and it's Kevin Kline and, oh, wow, I can't remember.
Kenneth Branagh.
Mm-hmm. And they're so good together. And then Kevin Kline also voices Mr. Fish Odor on Bob's Burgers.
He's so good.
And so I know how funny he can be just delivering lines.
Oh, yeah.
But then when we were rewatching this, you watch him, like, as he sits crisscross and does, like, backwards rolls out of things, or the funniest thing in the world are the faces he makes when he and Jamie Lee Curtis are having sex.
Oh, that is a really funny sex scene.
That is a great
when
sex
he's speaking
scene.
Italian to her. That's also a really, really great character trait for a comedy. Jamie Lee Curtis's character is insanely turned on by her lover speaking another language to her, so she has Otto do it. He speaks Italian. But then he's saying things like mozzarella.
Yeah, because he does not know enough
but
Italian.
But I love that she does that with John Cleese, too. She has him. He starts speaking Russian.
And you're right. It is a very good character trait, because it's not funny. Something that you see in a lot of movies, but it's immediately identifiable. Mm-hmm. Where it's not, like, a kink or something sexy that people can't understand. Immediately you're like, oh, well, I'm not into that, but I can see why she would be.
Yeah.
And it works.
That's
like,
funny.
From start to finish, anytime somebody talks in another language, yeah, you just know she is getting horned up.
Are there any lines in the movie that you think are, like, just incredible?
One of my favorite bits in the movie is not just that Otto is very stupid, but that he's also cursing constantly. And he...
You're a true Vulgarian, aren't you?
And then he says, you're the Vulgarian, you fuck. And I don't know why. I know why. That's great. Like,
it's a great line.
Oh, yeah. That's probably my absolute favorite bit.
Yeah.
And then I like whenever Ken is slowly driving the steamroller towards him.
Revenge!
And then he stutters back at him. It's Ken! Coming to kill me!
It's incredible.
What an asshole Otto is.
Otto is, throughout the entire movie, everything he does. Like, he's just such a jerk.
To everyone.
Yeah.
To, like, even Jamie Lee Curtis, who he's supposedly in love with and is trying to, like, make something with.
Yeah. It is interesting. Like, the minute he meets Ken, he walks in and looks at the fish, and he's like, you'd be good with some vinegar and chips. Like, immediately, like, harassing this guy.
Yeah.
But that is another funny... So, like, the main plot of the movie is they're trying to get these diamonds. Jamie Lee Curtis is trying to seduce John Cleese to, like, you know, make sure they can have all the legal information they need, and...
But also, they're trying to keep one guy in jail so that,
true,
like, he can't get the diamonds and they can go get them on their own.
True.
But then the diamonds aren't where they're supposed to be. They've been moved!
Yeah. But the greatest thing about the movie is the B-plot, which is Michael Palin trying to murder the little old lady who saw them. She's a witness, and they basically
witness.
Need her taken out so that she cannot testify on them in court. And the best part about it is that he's such an animal lover. Like, you can tell from the beginning, from the very first scene, he's, like, feeding his fish. He's got all these, like, posters up in his apartment of, like, you know, stop animal cruelty, like, you know, this, and he's got, like, a giant picture of a baby seal on the wall. So this man loves animals, and it's just the irony in that every single time he attempts to kill the little lady, he accidentally murders one of her dogs.
I think that's why it works, too, because he shows immediate remorse and, like, hates what he's doing.
That's
but
the
he has
best
to keep
part,
going.
Is that he'll kill the dog and then just, like, immediately start crying. And
they
I
go to their
love,
funeral,
yeah,
their little
I love
doggy funerals.
Each scene when it's her, like, standing at the grave of her little Yorkie dog, and she's just, like, devastated and crying, and then he's, like, back in the shadow in the trees crying, knowing that he killed the dog. Oh, it's so funny.
Yeah, it's great in... Oh, what?
Oh, I was gonna say, one of my other favorite moments in this movie, when we watched it, you heard me, I cackled out loud. One of my favorite parts is when, Michael Palin and John Cleese, like, rush to the airport towards the end of the movie, and they're like, he runs up to the counter and he's like, I need a ticket, I need to get on this flight, and she goes, luggage? And then you just hear this loud thump, and you look over, and Michael Palin's gone and, like, gotten in one of the, he's, like, sitting in one of the suitcases, and it's on its way on the belt, on the little conveyor belt, and just the look
the face he's making,
the face that he makes to John Cleese, he's like, look at what I'm doing. He's so resolute. It's just one of those really funny moments that, again, you cannot write. You can only get it on set that day, depending on how talented your performer is. But yeah, I love that part. So you said you had some trivia.
Oh, I've got a bunch of it.
Okay.
One thing that is just interesting to me that I found looking into this movie, John Cleese's character's name, Archie Leach.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who Archie Leach is?
No.
That is the real name of Cary Grant, famous movie
Archibald
star.
Leach, yes, okay.
And
I have heard that.
He was born really close, John Cleese was born really close to where he's from, and he said it's the closest he would get to being Grant.
That's amazing.
Taking his name in a movie.
That's really interesting. He tends to do that a lot. Do you remember in Rat Race when his character's name is Donald Sinclair?
Yeah.
Which was the name of the real guy who, like, Basil Fawlty is named after?
Yeah.
Yeah, he must really love to, like, do those little inside jokes with character
names. Speaking of Basil Fawlty, there is, I think, a little nod to that, where in this movie, he and his wife sleep in separate beds, the exact same like they do in Fawlty Towers. And I don't know if that's a British thing where it's more acceptable
I know that on TV in America, even in the 50s and 60s, you couldn't show a married couple sleeping in a double bed. Like, you had to have separate beds.
That's so weird.
I know. It was just a thing on TV that was necessary. So it must have been necessary, I'm guessing, in Fawlty Towers. Like, they probably couldn't show a married couple sleeping in a bed at the time.
How dare an audience assume people are having sex?
The reason, and it's 1988 when this movie comes out, so I'm guessing that was more of a character choice.
Yeah.
Like, there's clearly the passion is dead. They're not doing anything.
Their marriage is not working, and you see that throughout the movie.
Yeah. I don't know that I would consider that to be a thing.
I feel like it's a nod. But there's a couple other interesting things. In the robbery in the very beginning, mm-hmm. they have guns, and they're going around with guns. But to get this metal door open, you see one of them shoot a crossbow at a button on a wall, and then it opens this gate. That's actually Kevin Kline shooting the crossbow, and he got it on the second take, hit the button.
Wow.
Like, that's pretty impressive.
Kevin Kline.
He's a Renaissance man.
He's great. Like, his agility and coordination is so impressive. There's that scene in this movie when they're going through the metal detectors at the airport, and he takes his gun out of his coat. And as he's walking through the metal detector, he kind of, throws it around the metal detector and then catches it on the other side so he doesn't have to walk through with it. And when I was younger, that impressed the hell out of me.
It is impressive, just the way he does it. And you're like, that's a way to get around a metal detector.
It's very smooth. It's very quick. But yeah, what else?
There's a bit of an urban legend around this movie that it seems like it's actually true. So there's an urban legend that when this movie was shown in theaters in Denmark, there's a Danish man named Ole Benson. I'm probably getting that wrong because it's a Danish name. But he literally laughed himself to death during the scene where Ken gets the chips up his nose.
Oh my God.
His heart rate went between 250 and 500 beats per minute, and he succumbed to cardiac arrest. Apparently the story behind it is that... The story behind is that he had made a joke a few years earlier with his family during dinner where he himself put pieces of cauliflower up his nose and made a bet with the rest of his family members. Like, everyone puts cauliflower up your nose. Whoever could eat their carrots without the cauliflower falling out wins. And so he sees the scene and immediately remembers that insane, weird, dumb thing. And he couldn't stop laughing, thinking about it.
And he died during the movie?
And he died. And
that's interesting.
It went around Scandinavia, especially, and spread around as this urban legend.
Yeah.
But then his son came forward and was like, no, that dinner thing happened. He did die during the movie.
I can see why people would think it was fake, because immediately when you told me, what I thought of was that Monty Python sketch where the guy writes the funniest joke that's ever been written, and then he reads it and then dies laughing, and then every single person, his mom comes in, finds him dead, and then she reads it, and then she dies, and, the police that go in there, read it, and then they die.
Yep.
So it made me think of that. So that's really interesting.
And another interesting thing, Michael Palin had a really fascinating kind of...
life?
More time with this movie. Oh. Apparently when he read the first script, he wrote in his diary he thought it was terrible.
Ooh.
He did not like it, didn't think it was funny.
Ooh.
And obviously it went on to be very well
received. It's a funny movie.
But his father had a stutter. And so he used a lot of his real-life experience to bring that into the movie. And it shows whenever he's around people he's more comfortable with,
yeah,
like Tom and Wanda,
yeah,
the stutter isn't nearly as intense as when, yeah, like, Otto's there or...
That makes sense.
Yeah, because he's more comfortable around them.
Yeah.
And apparently it was really well-received by people who have speech impediments. And he went on later to found a school helping people with speech impediments.
Really?
And scammers. Like, this movie changed him, I think, a lot.
That's so sweet.
Yeah, it's really sweet.
I do love that in the movie, like, Kevin Kline's character is consistently, like, really making fun of him. And
yeah,
really, really, like, harassing him about his stutter. But I do love when John Cleese comes to him and he's like, I need the name of the hotel. And there's this really long scene of him trying to say it. But I just love how John Cleese is like in a hurry, but he's being so nice.
Yeah, he's like, trying his best to
I
get
mean,
it
and
out
maybe
of
that's
him.
The difference between like at the time, like a British person and an American person.
Yeah.
The British person's like, okay, all the time in the world. Come on. you've got it.
Whereas the American person is just guessing everything. Yeah. Like, and then one of the last little piece of trivia I'll leave everybody with. You mentioned earlier the dog's funerals.
Yes.
So do you remember they're singing in Latin during the first dog's funeral?
Mm-hmm.
Did you catch at all what they're saying?
I thought I recognized the song.
No, they definitely wrote it because, I mean, it may be like a tune that you know. But the lyrics in Latin are Misere Dominus, Canis Mortus Est.
No.
Which translated means, have mercy, Lord, have mercy, Lord, the dog is dead.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
We have to tell my dad about this.
How great is that? That they're just singing like, Lord, the dog is dead. The dog is dead, Lord.
That is great. And I do love when a movie or a show has jokes like that, that they're like, you know what? Our writing is good enough. We don't have to make every joke self-explanatory.
And
I think it's a mark of a good writer.
That they really take care with every inch of this movie. Like, every single scene is carefully crafted.
Oh my god, that's so funny.
Everyone needs to rewatch this movie. If you haven't seen it in a couple years,
so
watch
good.
It. You're going to pick up something new. Like, Jamie Lee Curtis is doing a masterful performance as well.
She's,
like, I know we haven't talked about her
she's
much.
She's great.
But holy cow, she's great. And man, is she stunning in this movie. Her legs go on for days.
She's stunning in a lot of movies.
I know, but I mean, at the time, like, she was still doing or had, like, just finished doing the first couple Halloween movies.
I think Trading Places had come out.
Oh, yeah.
But
I think I first knew her from Halloween.
Gotcha.
And so, to this see is... somebody a very different, like, a departure
I
from
think
that.
This movie is one of the first things I ever saw her in.
Interesting.
When I was little.
Yeah, it's, I mean, she does great.
Yeah, she's good. I think it's time for a little snack break. We'll be right back. Welcome to Snack Break. Every episode, we like to try a British food, snack, or dish, or recipe that we've never had before, and give it a little taste. See
and
what it's like.
We decided not to eat fish for this. We didn't want to eat live fish.
No!
Didn't want to eat Jell-O. We've had that before.
Why would we eat Jell-O?
Because that's what he ate instead of the fish.
Oh.
They were Jell-O fish.
You're right. We could have had Jell-O.
We could have had
Or
Jell-O.
Jelly, as they call
jelly.
It in England. I've heard people in England talk about jelly before.
Yeah.
Thinking they were talking about... Yeah, like peanut,
like
jam. Peanut butter and jelly.
Yeah.
It's Jell-O.
Like gelatin.
Yeah.
Jelly.
I actually knew an Irish girl who had a cat named Jellycat.
Oh. Jellycat.
So today we are tasting custard creams, which are a cookie.
I was hoping they would be.
They're made by McVitie's, who makes chocolate hobnobs.
Oh,
so,
Danny, I love hobnobs.
I know. Hobnobs are chocolate ones.
And, I mean, I like the packaging. It's bright yellow, which gets your attention immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And on the cover, I was like, ooh, I think these are cookies that we're having tonight. And I'm very excited because, like, while I like candy, I love me a good cookie.
Let's take a look at them. They're really cute. My favorite thing about them is they've got a nice little stamped image on them. It's very like ornate.
It's very intricate. Yeah, there's there's a lot going on here, and stamped inside this little diamond. It says actually
custard
says
custard cream,
so you don't forget what cookie you're eating.
Yeah,
it's not like. Well, I guess it is like an Oreo, but this is literally telling you if an Oreo had on it chocolate cream cookie.
Let's taste it.
Let's try them.
Mmm.
Yeah.
I like it.
I do too.
It's kind of like the Oreo where it's like the vanilla cookie and the vanilla cream.
Mm.
The golden Oreo.
Yeah.
It's like that because it's not chocolate, but it's really good.
I was thinking there's some like... terrible. I'm sure they're like dollar store cookies or something, like really cheap cookies, but that I used to love that were similar like this, where they were kind of square, but they had lemon inside.
Mm.
And so even looking at these where it is that kind of yellowish tint on the inside,
yeah,
I want it to be a little more powerful. I want more custard flavor. Like, I like it. I do think it's good. The cookies are great,
mm-hmm.
but I just want more custard. I want more filling flavor.
I would agree. That, while this is really good, I think the cookie part is the best part of it.
Yeah.
The filling is, it's good, but it's not, it's nothing, to write home about, I guess.
Yeah.
But the cookie itself is very crisp. It, like, just kind of breaks apart. Almost
it's
like a
soft.
Almost like a shortbread.
Yeah, it is very reminiscent of a shortbread.
Yeah. It's good. I like it. Yeah,
this is good.
This is a nice little cookie. Like, I don't know that I would... I had to order these on Amazon, like, special from England. I don't know that I would order another one anytime soon, but this would be a great cookie to put on a plate with a few others if you were serving tea.
Yeah.
Or, you know, having, especially like, a dessert thing.
If you have, like, those fancy towers, like... if you have like a three-tiered snack display for desserts or for tea time,
mm-hmm.
this would fit in well.
Yeah, you could put some of these in there with some hobnobs.
Oh. Can we just do hobnobs every episode?
Yes.
Don't and I'll just pretend I've never had them.
Mm, what are these hobnobs? Never had them.
Never heard of those. Mm, I quite like this.
These are good. These are good. Yeah. McVitties, you make good stuff.
McVitty?
McVitties.
Hmm.
Custard creams. I think they might be cuter than they are delicious.
Yeah, I think I really like it. I mean, it's a perfectly harmless plain cookie. Like, if you like cookies with not a lot, like not too much flavor, like sometimes cookies are overpowering with some flavors.
Yeah.
But this is a good solid
This is probably a good one to dunk into your tea.
Yeah, I just did that. It is pretty good to do.
Delicious.
Yeah.
All right, let's get back to our topic, A Fish Called Wanda. So yeah, we've talked about the premise, the characters, the actors, some of the best lines. Did you have any more trivia, or did you give all of the trivia?
That's most of the trivia I had. I mean, there's a lot of information, like I mentioned, because Halloween was happening, Jamie Lee Curtis has a line in this
mm-hmm.
where she says that she would have sex with the murderous psychopath Otto even if he was her brother, which is kind of a big part of the Halloween series she's pursued by. There's this incestuous subplot with a murderous psychopath
half brother. Yeah.
And I think that's a nod to Halloween.
Interesting. Yeah.
And also they...
I also love the scene when they're in the, John Cleese has, like, borrowed the key to his friend's, like, river front house, and he's basically naked. You see, like, 90% of John Cleese naked in this movie.
Yeah, and he's fit.
He looks pretty good.
And especially at the time where you and I have talked recently about this, how, like, Superman back in the day, if you look at Superman shirtless, he's just a guy. Like, he maybe went to the gym once a month.
You're talking about Christopher Reeve?
Yeah. But, I mean, it's like masculinity at the time compared to now.
Mm-hmm.
We have to have muscles on our on-screen male protagonists.
It's
true. They have to be massive.
It's true. If you're going to be in a movie, you have to work out. Yeah.
And so, whenever John Cleese was getting undressed, you think, oh, this is a comedy guy. Like, he's just from all these goofy shows.
Yeah.
But then he takes off his shirt and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Good for you,
John. He doesn't
John.
Look bad.
Good for you.
And you see his butt when he takes his underwear off. But yeah,
one of my...
Do you
think that was his butt?
Yeah, because I saw his face in the same
frame. Oh, yeah, it is in that shot.
But I do love when he gets completely naked, and then that family walks in. And they just, like, look at him, and the kids, you can see the kids, like, looking. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, he's naked. And then he grabs a picture of the wife and, like, pulls it in front of his penis. Yeah. It's really funny.
It's really good.
So...
I do have one last piece of trivia.
Okay.
So his daughter in the movie, Leech's daughter... Mm-hmm. That's actually John Cleese's real-life daughter.
Aww,
and he, like, Portia? Put her in the movie. Yeah, Portia is played by Cynthia Cleese.
It's a very, very small role, but it's funny.
But it's kind of sweet where he's like, yeah, get on in here.
There's also a good cameo in this. Do you remember?
Yeah, at the very end.
Yeah, when they were at the airport, Otto needs to take somebody's boarding pass because he needs to get on the plane. And I forget what happened to his. I think John Cleese took it.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, he runs up behind a guy who's, like, getting on the plane, and it's Stephen Fry. And I was
young
like,
young Stephen Fry.
Because I've seen this movie, and I saw it a lot when I was little, but I guess it's been a long time since I've really sat down and watched it, and so I was like, what?
Yeah, and Stephen he only Fry? Has one line, and they don't really focus on it, but it is interesting to see. Yeah. And it's really cool that, like, as this podcast is going on and on more, we can... reference and look back at other things where it's nice seeing John Cleese appeared in a previous episode mm-hmm. we did in Fawlty Towers that we've mentioned.
But that's the thing
Brian
about...
Laurie as well as...
That's the thing about British TV and film, though. It's just, like, it's all the same people over... I mean, and you could say that for American TV as well, but it's just, like, it seems like maybe there's a smaller pool of working actors in England than there are in America.
Well, in England, to be a working actor, especially back then, not as much now, but you had to have money to go to the acting school to be a good actor.
Interesting.
It wasn't as a lot of blue-collar actors.
Yeah.
As much as, like, it is now, and America was founded by those kind of actors.
Yeah.
It was like, I mean, in the early days, it was rich people, and then it quickly became, like, if you got talent, do it, but then you better keep having talent, otherwise we'll forget you immediately. Whereas Britain is like, eh, if you have a bad role, we'll give you another shot or 12, like, just come back.
So how British do you think this movie is? It's not overwhelmingly British because of the four main cast members, two of them are American.
Yeah.
And I think it's also an American made, but set in, like, I think it was by an American studio.
Yeah.
But
I think there are things that feel very British where Michael Palin has to take out this woman, has to kill this old lady. In any American movie, they would just shoot her and dump her in the river or
That's
something.
True.
Like, it would be a violent, awful thing. And in this, the whole subplot is, like, he's not a contracted killer. He's not good at that. And he, like, the gun is his last resort. And he doesn't even shoot her with the gun. He shoots something else, so it's an accident. I think that feels very British to me.
Yeah.
Where the only time they use guns aren't to actually kill somebody. It's more intimidation than anything else.
Yeah.
And that was pretty British, but but I think it's pretty universal at the same time.
Yeah. I don't think it's as British as some of the other things we've covered.
Definitely not.
So why do you think someone should watch this if they haven't seen it?
It's one of the funniest movies of all time. It's always, seriously, like, look at lists of, like, the 1,000 movies to see before you die, Roger Ebert's favorite movies. Mm-hmm. It's always at the top of those.
Really?
Fish Called Wanda is very well received by critics and by, like, average audiences, which is rare.
Just very funny.
It's very funny. If you want to, like, laugh a lot, if you want, like, if you like Kevin Klein, if you think Jamie Lee Curtis is sexy, if, like, you want to see somebody stutter, if you want to see somebody get run over by a steamroller, like... There's so much to love in this movie and nothing to hate.
Yeah.
There are other great movies that have scenes that are a bit of a drag and you're like, well, we gotta get past this scene to get to the good stuff.
Yeah, it's a pretty fast moving movie.
Yeah. And I'd say, like, maybe the only scenes that get a little slow are whenever Tom is, like, in jail and they're doing the jail stuff.
That's true. It's all necessary to the plot.
Yeah. But it just slows down because he's not quite as talented as the rest of them acting wise, but he's still good.
Yeah.
Why would you say somebody should watch it?
Pretty much everything you said. I think if you like Kevin Klein, you have to watch this.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just a good comedy. It's just a well-written, solidly paced comedy movie. It's fun.
And in an era where most American movies are heavily improv-based, where you can tell a lot of them are on set just feeding each other, like, oh, say this instead. This will be funny.
Yeah.
you can tell the extreme difference in a person that took a lot of time and energy and effort to carefully write an entire film. That the comedy here is structured and perfectly executed.
Agreed. Well, are you ready for your British slang word?
Ooh, I almost forgot.
Or your British word.
Oh, you can try to stump me, but I think the audience knows. I get it right every week.
No. I actually made a spreadsheet of all of our episodes and all of the slang words, like in British words, that I think you've gotten two of them right.
Oh.
So.
You can't trick me with bog roll. I know the bathroom.
Yeah, I think we're going to have people start sending slang and like British words.
Where should they send it to?
I don't know. Maybe anglefilespodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, that's a good way to reach us.
Well, I'm just trying to think of a way they can send it to us that you won't see it.
Oh, true. Also, I don't use Twitter much. So that's if you want to tweet at us, I think that's a good way because.
Or I guess message on Instagram too because you wouldn't check the message. But anyway, we're not running out of British words for you to guess, but now when I'm looking up lists, I keep seeing stuff that, like, I know you know what a stag do is.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, what a lorry is. So, but
I'm sure, yeah, I'm sure listeners of this know obscure British words, and they know that I don't know them.
True.
Or rather, they think that I don't, and they are wrong.
You never know them.
I know them every time.
All right, well, you do have a word today to guess.
Okay.
It's an old English word. Ooh. I think those are a really good one. They're not like a word that's really used in modern England as much, but they're really funny, so I think we should keep doing them.
Yeah. So, I mean, I have been called the Shakespeare of my time.
You need to stop saying that. So your word today is expurgifactor. Or expurgifactor. I'm not sure.
Okay.
It's E-X-P-E-R-G-E-F-A-C-T-O-R. Expurgifactor. Mm. What do you think that is? It's a thing.
Yeah, the expurgifactor. It is a tool.
Okay.
It is used in farming, way back in the day. It's whenever... You've got a bunch of rats that live underneath the soil.
What?
And you've got to...
That's not a thing.
You've got to expurge them. You don't even know how true this is. Do you know, like...
Rats living underneath the soil. So you mean, like, rats burrowing.
Yeah. Like, that's what rat terriers are for.
Okay.
But, so the expurgifactor is a tool that they would use to get the soil rooted up, and they would expurge the rats from within, and this factor did it.
The
expurgifactor.
Wow. Mm.
But seriously, there are some crazy videos on YouTube if you ever want to watch rat terriers going nuts.
I don't want to see that.
Oh, it's intense.
But you got that wrong.
Come on.
An expurgifactor is something that wakes you up. So a clock, a bird in the morning, or like a loud person in the mornings, anything that wakes you from being sleeping is an expurgifactor.
I'm glad we use the word alarm now. Much easier to say. Did you set the expurgifactor?
Nobody says that.
I know. That's what I'm saying. It's good that we've changed it.
Well, thank you everyone for listening. This has been A Fish Called Wanda. Great movie. Give it a watch.
Please let us know what your favorite lines are.
Yeah.
This movie's full of them. Like, hit us up on our social media.
And we're going to post a picture of the custard creams on Instagram. So... take a little look-see.
Yeah, and let us know. We've been thinking about, too, maybe doing, like, a small live video segment of us trying the snacks. Let us know if that'd be something you're interested in. I think it'd be fun. Sometimes people want to see what we look like. I don't know.
No. I mean, they can. There are pictures of us on Instagram.
That's true.
But, no, that's why a podcast is so good, is that I don't have to, like, fix my hair.
That's true. We got our Jamie Jams.
Well, thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, everyone who's been listening. We are loving that we're getting more listeners. This is great, and it's really fun to do. So, thanks. Keep calm and avoid the green ones. They're not ripe yet.